Hello and welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am here with Martin Loco Gringo Willis.
Oh.
Gringo Loco.
Yeah.
Do you know what that means?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Well, tell your friends, you know, when you go to the store or something and you see somebody who you think might speak Spanish, tell them that you are Gringo Loco and check out their reaction.
I think it means a crazy... Yes? No?
It does. It's a crazy white guy.
Yeah. Well, I suppose if the shoe fits.
Yeah. No, so you shouldn't do that. They might treat you weird. But yeah, I felt it was appropriate and kind of fun to give you that nickname today. I hope that's okay with you.
I just hope it doesn't stick, but thank you.
Yeah, probably will. I like it, so I'll probably stick with it. But how are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. You know, we had a cold snap back here in the east, so it's been nice and warm all year. All of a sudden, it hit 15 degrees last night.
Yeah, I saw that. Lots of places were really cold, and it was funny because last night we were kind of doing our thing, sitting in bed looking on the internet and everything. And, you know, my girlfriend says, look, it's she's like, this is weird. It's like, you know, super cold in the east. And it's weird just because we'd been outside all day and, you know, it's so warm here. So it's kind of odd that it's like that in other places. But the guest, I guess I should talk about the guest first. My guest for today is Sean Kevin Jason. Have you ever had him?
No.
And he talks about black triangles. Actually, he's got a Facebook page dedicated to black triangles, and the reason being that he had an amazing sighting himself. And he used to believe that the black triangle phenomena was extraterrestrial in nature. However, after his sighting, and he'll tell us about his extraordinary sighting, but after his sighting, he feels a little differently. So we'll talk about that. But what's cool, of course, is just, when it comes down to it, it's. I've also thought more about this lately because of the Phoenix Incident movie, where, you know, we had that roundtable discussion. They released a part of it. They released Nick Pope talking about the Cosford UFO incident. But in the full version, which they attached to this pre-screening, which we got to go see, you know, we talked more about black triangles, but Lee had his own amazing sighting, let alone all of these other witnesses. Lee Spiegel, I mean, who was in that roundtable.
Oh,
You've probably talked to him about it. I've talked to him about it.
Oh, yes.
But the black triangle sightings maybe are the best sightings out there. I mean, people see them so closely, and they're seen so often. So it's a fascinating topic. I'm fascinated by it. I know many others are. So it's so that's what we're going to be talking about.
Well, you know, that's something I had a friend of mine, and very active amateur astronomer with his own radio show, everything, was carrying his telescope back to his home in England, and a huge black triangle went right over him.
Really?
You know what I mean? So they always say, like, you know, how come astronomers never see them? Did I do a good enough voice there?
I love that. That was good.
Yeah. And, you know, he's just there actually are a number of astronomers that see something and amateur astronomers. But it's just not, you know, I've talked to a few so far. So, you know, they're out there. They do have these sightings.
Yeah. Cool. So that's what we're going to talk about. But next, before we get to the news, and this is sort of news related, I wanted to talk to you about the April Fool's jokes out there. So, of course, okay. There's always some UFO or alien-related April Fool's jokes out there. Did you run across any?
Well, I actually had a friend of mine involved. He's a comedian, and he used to be on Dinner and a Movie for 16 years.
Paul, I remember that.
Yeah, he went on Heather Wade's show as a very conservative Republican, and people were getting angry. It was awesome.
Oh, how
that was a
funny.
Lot of fun. Yeah.
I could see people totally flipping out. That's hilarious.
Yep. So that was good. That was April Fool's, of course. And there was all kinds of great stuff. I love Netflix thing. Did you see that?
Oh, what was that? I don't think I did.
John Stamos was all over Netflix. You open any category, whatever, and John Stamos was everywhere. And then the CEO of Netflix had a video on Netflix itself apologizing to John. And all of a sudden, John's in the background, pats him on the shoulder. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
It was good.
Yeah. So
let's
this
hear
is
some
one.
Of yours.
This is one that's funny. Now, this one isn't space or UFO related. The rest of them are related. But did you hear about the Google one?
Yes, I heard something about it.
Essentially,
people got angry and they shut it down? Or?
Yeah, so it was already shut down probably by the time I woke up, because it was probably you guys on the East Coast that got upset about it, and they shut it down and it was already news how Google was apologizing. But essentially, and it's just people not paying attention, although I can understand before my first coffee in the morning, you know, I'm liable to do anything. I mean, I've made my coffee and then opened the fridge and put my coffee in the fridge and then left and then thought, where the hell is my coffee? I know I made some coffee this morning, and then get home and find it in the fridge. Just weird stuff that I do. Anyway, Gmail had an extra button, an extra send button. They had two of them. One of them was orange. If you click the orange one to send your email, it attached this little video of a minion, and it attached at the end of your email doing a mic drop. So a minion came out and did a mic drop, like, I'm out of here, which is pretty funny, I think. But the problem is that people got really upset because they use Gmail for professional reasons. And one person, although I find this very hard to believe, one person said she was fired for accidentally sending the minion email. I guess it's possible, but people were really upset about that.
Yeah, I heard someone sent a job resume, and that went through with it. So
that's really funny.
I think people will have a good enough sense of humor for the most part. I mean, I can't see someone actually getting fired for that, unless it was something super super sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Like with an account or something. But people got to lighten up. It's April Fool's Day, you know.
Yeah, you've got to expect that sort of thing. My Facebook, by the way, has been playing April Fools on me. For some reason, it keeps saying that I'm sending posts from Roatan, Honduras, maybe because I tagged some photos from there, and that's a bit frustrating. But this is a really good one. From Royal Caribbean, they wrote a story that they're revealing plans to enter a space tourism, and they posted pictures of this, like, galactic spaceship that's really cool, and they're going to call it Orbiter of the Galaxies. Cool looking picture, and it was kind of their April Fool's thing that they were going to have. But I think some people believed it. But what's also fun about it is that a lot of people, I think, including me, were like, "Man, you know that spaceship looks so cool. I wish it were true."
Mm.
Although we're going to talk about something similar to this that is true. I'll talk about that in a second. But the other fun one. This one was really cool. The Army released on their website, and I know this is going to trick people, and I'll bet you this is going to be tricking people going forward. Army scientists successfully teleport soldiers. So this is on their website from, the Army, and it's like a serious press release about how they've been working on this technology, and they were able to send some of their soldiers to a site in Germany using teleportation. One of the funny comments was that a device not unlike the flux capacitor seen in the Back to the Future movie series was employed during the experiment.
You know, You know what? This is what's going to happen with that one. I guarantee you there's going to be conspiracy theories out there. And people will be talking about this 5 years from now.
I know.
After they copied the page from the internet, you know?
Yep, at the very end they wrote, the task force expects to report its initial findings on April 1, 2017. So I bet people are, this is going to create so many things. In fact, I posted on Facebook a story from, I can't remember which website, but essentially they were talking about, here it is, it was from CNET. So CNET did an April Fool's joke in 2010 about a time traveler. And it was a really silly one. I mean, it was the same kind of thing, except that the Army one is actually more serious, so that's why it's probably going to be more convincing. But theirs was kind of silly, and but it became this big thing where everybody believed it. They said even after they saw it became big and people were believing it, they started posting that, hey, this is an April Fool's joke. They even changed the title to say April Fool's, and people were saying, no, they're part of the cover-up. They're covering up that it was real, this time traveler story. So about a guy named Eloy Cole. So that's kind of funny. So those were cool, two cool space ones. Otherwise, I did repost some stories from past April Fool's jokes that we wrote about. One of them from Chris Hadfield, who's kind of a goofy guy, the Canadian astronaut, who, by the way, you know, one of his last times in space, he made that incredible Space Odyssey video. I don't know if you've seen it, but he played Space Odyssey in the space station with his guitar, and he made a video with video from – it's an amazing video. But on April Fool's, when he was up there in 2013, him and his colleagues, they took some pictures and added some UFOs and were pretending like they saw a UFO at the ISS, and at first they posted, oh my gosh, we saw a UFO, and it was really obvious, kind of cartoony-looking UFO, and then later they posted, oh, we found the culprit, and they have this cartoony little alien that they're holding. So it's kind of silly. And another one, which we wrote about, and this is really neat. I'm really proud of this story because it's about Virgin Galactic's April Fool's Day in 1989.
Wow, yeah. That far back, yeah.
Well, this one's really good because it scared the police, because essentially what they did is they created this big UFO-looking hot air balloon, and they floated it around town. People were reporting a UFO. Yeah, they really freaked out, and they landed it in this stadium where they had this like ET waiting there for them. And it was the guy that owned Virgin Galactic. What the heck's his name? I forgot his name right now. I better look it up.
Not Elon Musk. Who's I'm trying to think. Oh, I know who you mean. Now, has that's actually been around since 1989?
He did this. He pulled this joke, yeah, in 1989. Richard Branson.
Okay, that's right, yeah.
And so the police weren't aware. Or not all of them, so people were calling in and police were freaking out. So it was like this big deal. But I've posted pictures, and this is what's neat. So last year, on April 1st, Richard Branson wrote a blog about this prank. But what was great about this prank, because I've known about it for years, I've written about it before, but I was really excited about this because he posted a bunch of pictures that, as far as I know, don't exist anywhere else about this prank. And they're great pictures. And he also, you know, talked about the whole thing and what had happened. Well, I, you know, summarized what he said in this story, and I posted those pictures on our story last year about this. And he has since taken that blog down. So as far as I know, and we've even had people contact us asking us about the pictures, as far as I know, we're the only ones that have these pictures posted in this account from Richard Branson on the whole thing. So you can check out our website for it. But the pictures are great, and you can see how convincing this hot air balloon is. I mean, it's very elaborate. I don't know if they still fly it around or whatever happened to the balloon, but it's pretty cool.
Wow. Well, I had a little bit of a prank pulled on me. I had someone that I, a pretty serious, you know, researcher, told me, they said they had to tell me something in confidence. And this was 2 or 3 days ahead of April Fool's. So I wasn't ready. And they said, that they shapeshift into a mantis. And I read that and I went, okay.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, April Fool's Day, they told me they were kidding. It's like, oh, geez.
That's
I was thinking
funny.
There was some issues with the person going on or something. I thought that was pretty far out there.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, so they got me.
But, you know, I was talking about the Royal Caribbean and them having their, you know, space liner or something like that. We're not that far yet, but it is really exciting that there's more and more stories, and I posted another one on my Facebook, but that the Bigelow Aerospace, you know, inflatable module is going up to the space station to be attached really soon here, and we're getting lots of media stories on that. And mm-hmm. that's just exciting because it's the first step in him, of course, UFO enthusiast Robert Bigelow,
right,
who's doing this. But it's the next step for him to create space habitats for space tourism and experimentation, kind of a private thing going forward. So really, because it's so different and it's so novel, people are really excited about this in the space community. So that's pretty exciting.
You know, I would like to explore the topic of the possibilities of further space travel and possibly, you know, territory issues and stuff like that. It would be really interesting to try to look into the future, what could possibly happen. I know that there's already some laws set in place for the moon, I believe. I've heard that anyway.
There are.
Yeah.
And Bigelow Aerospace has been challenging those, and they've been actually a lead on figuring this out, because they have met with NASA on another project to actually put a base on the moon. He wants to put one of these inflatable habitats on the moon, but his issue is working out the real estate issue, the laws behind. Can he do that? Who owns the territory? And if he's going to plant something somewhere, he has to know that it's okay for him to have his device on this territory, because if there are any legal issues that arise, it could, of course, be astronomically expensive to move it.
No pun intended, astronomically.
Yeah.
And what are they going to do, evict him?
Yeah, exactly.
What are you going to do once someone plants there? You're not going to go to the moon and, you know.
So who knows? So it is an issue that's being tackled. Another one is we've written about it, but there are some think tanks out there that do tackle these issues, which is really interesting. So they try to figure this sort of thing out.
Yeah, that's really fascinating, really.
Yeah, it is.
Because that could go into the Mars or any other, anything out there, really.
Yeah.
Once we get to travel to wherever it is.
Yeah.
You know. Who owns it? Why would we own it over, you know, possibly the alien life that's there or whatever, you know?
Yeah. So the week before last, there was a lot of great UFO news. Hillary on Jimmy Kimmel, you know, talking about UFOs in Area 51. The Area 51 people held at gunpoint. The Roswell UFO and Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback, seeing a UFO. Lots of great stuff. And we've got a lot of that on on YouTube. We did a Open Mind UFO report that we posted last Friday, so people can see that. However, this week's a little more slow. We were talking about that before the show, so it's good we had something to talk about with the April Fool's stuff. However, do you have a news story you would like to talk about, my friend?
Well, I do, only because it's something that I haven't seen before from MUFON. I've never actually seen anything, and this is titled Witness... Virginia witness reports possible alien abduction. Now, a lot of people are reporting alien abduction, so I wanted to see why this was different and why it was posted. And this is a blog written from Roger Marsh. And on March 3rd of this year, this woman was preparing to go to sleep, and when the incident began, and it's a typical what you would call an abduction type of situation, except there's a bracelet involved. Now, this woman does a drawing, and I had to kind of chuckle at the drawing because it's kind of like a smiling alien that looks like he's kind of doing a jig or something, kind of dancing. but also, if you, she was talking about it was standing in front of as the patio door and almost as tall as the door. That's a little different because, you know, you usually hear these alien type beings only three or four feet tall, something like that. And so anyway, she talks about this bracelet and she drew this bracelet. It's got a little bit of bling going on there, but it's got also all these little symbols like you always hear about from either Jesse Marcel Jr., he mentioned that, or Jem Peniston, or, you know, other people have mentioned that they've seen sort of like writing on a craft, has some little doodads written on the bracelet. And so anyway, it's an abduction report. It's also one that the first one I've seen, actually, that MUFON actually, or anyone wrote about from MUFON, like Roger. As far as I know, it's his first blog on any abduction case.
That's a good point. I don't remember him writing about abduction cases in the past either. I think what was he? I know he found this one really interesting. I talked to him a bit about it. Not just that she has these drawings, which are really cool. I think he just found her to be very credible. So, yeah, it is an interesting. It's a little different than the normal abduction report. So it's interesting. I mean, who knows what's going on here? It doesn't seem as though there's any physical evidence. So I always wonder, you know, are these non-physical? Are these like a dream or something? Or something more? I don't know. It's so strange. And before people get too upset with me, I don't know if people realize that John Mack, everybody loves to talk about John Mack. He was the number one abduction researcher, blah, blah, blah. And he was great. Don't get me wrong. I'm a big fan of his as well. But he did not believe that this was a physical phenomena. He felt it was a non-physical phenomena, that it was kind of a non-physical part of us that was being somehow accessed or by a third party.
You mean basically was, and this is basically the second time I've heard the same thing this week. Are you saying that what he was saying, that there was something actually going on through possibly aliens or whatever, but just not physically?
Exactly.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know. I don't think a lot of people realize that. People think of abductions as a physical, because, you know, that's what it implies. You're being physically abducted and taken somewhere. And, of course, some of the great cases like Travis Walton or the Maine Allagash people or Betty and Barney Hill, that they do seem to be a physical phenomena. However, he felt in the people he spoke with that it was a non-physical phenomena. And for the most part, but he did feel that some sort of extraterrestrial race was engaging the human race, but in a non-physical way where they felt like they were being physically abducted, but they were being taken and interacted with. So,
you know, that would actually explain a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Why there is never any physical evidence and why there are, you know, occasionally you hear about witnesses, but usually there aren't any witnesses.
But the problem with that is you can't really prove that's the case. You can't prove that it's not a psychological phenomenon.
That's true. You can't prove it is or it is not.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Mm. So who knows? I don't know. You know, I think part of the discussion coming up with Sean in a minute, we kind of talk about that and some experiences he had. That I think are really interesting in this kind of area. But, yeah, so, you know, sometimes it's almost like some mysteries are just meant to remain mysteries.
Mm-hmm. It, you know, there is, as my son has said to me before, whatever it is, whether it's a ghost or anything, there is some type of answer for what happened. You know, no matter what it is, there is an answer. But to ever be able to figure out what that answer is, that's the tough part.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So the case I want to talk about is another story written by Roger Marsh. It's another MUFON case. This is a video case. This took place April 15th, 2015. A witness said They were videotaping a pulsing square-shaped UFO low in the sky. He said he was walking towards his car when he saw this object. It was about 40 degrees above the skyline. And, you know, you could watch this video and see this object. It was kind of funny. He said the object was moving away from me very slowly before it disappeared behind the tree line. But his comments, I mean, you hear him, and his wife is skeptical, and he's like, "What do you mean? Of course that's a UFO." At first, I looked at it, and I thought, that's just a bright star. I mean, it looks like it's pulsating, but it looks like that's due to scintillation or the atmosphere. Especially when something is low on the horizon, the atmosphere is even more causes the effect of looking like pulsing and twinkling type of effect. And so that's what I thought it was. But, you know, just so people know, Roger does pass these videos past some other, you know, the scientific board of MUFON. Recently he's been doing that more so to make sure to see what they thought. And I talked to a couple of those guys, and I said, "Guys, this is looks like a star." And they said, "Yeah, but, you know, there's a witness, what he says, and it does move slowly." And when I watched the video again and I put it in full screen, it is moving. So
it are you sure it's moving against other stars? You see other stars?
Well, it's moving slowly, but at a pretty good pace, more quickly than a star would. I mean, the video is only a minute long, and it moves a pretty good distance from the beginning to the end of the video. Although that is it is moving slowly, so I think it is moving slower than star, or faster than stars would. Now it's moving straight and in at a steady speed. So I guess, and typically satellites don't necessarily move slow; they move pretty quickly. But maybe if one was moving away, it would appear to be moving slower than it was. So I don't know. It's I can't explain the movement, but at first I thought it was just no big deal. I don't know. You've seen the video. What else? Do you have any other thoughts?
No. You know, I'm actually looking at it now. You know, I mean, it's too bad. A lot of times, you know, I've tried to film things at night and on my iPhone, and it's just. It's next to impossible, and
yeah.
Then you always get the feedback. Oh, it's another. It's just a blurry light in the sky. What does it mean? You know.
Yeah.
But it's still interesting, and I think, you know, worth looking at.
Yeah, and the guy taping is definitely very enthusiastic about it. So.
Yeah.
Well, and right. As we all know, I mean, when you're there at the moment, your phone just does not capture. I'm sure we've all had this experience where we. Are somewhere and we see something extraordinary or great, even if it's just a pretty something pretty that we've seen, you know, and we videotape it, and you look at your video and it just does not do, you know, your experience justice at all.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a couple news stories for people. Did you have anything else?
No, I think I'm pretty much wrapped up for the day myself.
All right, great. And did you want to give us an update on
your... Oh, yes. Hey, as far as shaving my head for kids, I mentioned this last week. This is for children with cancers and their families. It's a benefit I'm doing. And it's right on my website, Podcast UFO. If anyone wants to donate, you can donate as little as you want or as much as you want. I'm almost halfway there to my $1,000 goal. I have $433 raised from... A lot from fans that have pitched in, and it's going great. It's excellent. I looked at other people that have done this in the past, and I would say that I'm doing pretty darn good.
Awesome. Well,
so we have a week and a couple of days left, and I will be totally bald for kids.
Awesome. You're gonna look great, I'm sure. You're gonna look like The Rock or Vin Diesel. The women are gonna they're gonna
clamoring
be flipping out.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did get a message that someone said, "Well, I've seen you in person before. There won't be too much hair on the floor." So that was nice to get.
Yeah.
Nice little comment.
It won't take long.
Right.
So awesome. And we'll put the link in the show notes again. And yeah, people check that out. You know, Also, is it a tax deduction? This is probably a
It is.
nonprofit.
Oh yes,
Yeah.
it's all the forms. Once someone donates, they'll get the proper code or whatever it is to use
Yeah.
for tax deduction. Yes.
So that's important for some people, this being tax
That's
time
right.
and people having to get taxes done.
Maybe Bob Bigelow will be listening. You never
Yeah,
know.
Bob. Hey, Bobby, baby. I know you're listening to the show. Go check this out. Well, great. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alejandro.
Okay, let's go ahead and talk to Sean. I'm very happy to welcome to the show Sean, Kevin, Jason. Hello.
Hello, how's it going, Alejandro?
Good. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
So you're not too far from here. You're nearby in Tucson.
Actually, I'm up in Las Vegas now. Moved here
Oh.
not too long ago, so yeah, enjoying Sin City here.
Oh, I guess I didn't realize that. Yeah, you're liking it?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's actually my hometown, so kind of just
Okay.
moved back home.
Cool. And I guess the climate's not too different, huh?
No, it's pretty much the same as Tucson, just less casino. I mean, well, Tucson has less casinos, obviously.
Yeah. Well, and the reason I say Tucson is because at least for a little while there, when I was helping and I was doing some Tucson MUFON meetings, you were out there. So I think you went to all of them. I got to see you there then.
Yeah, we've been pretty much running in the same circles for a while now. Either it was Arizona or Colorado.
Yeah.
So I'm just
And
waiting for you to move up to Las Vegas now.
yeah. Who knows? And I do love Vegas. I've been craving. I need to make another Vegas trip. It's funny. People are like, you don't really drink or gamble, but there's plenty to do in Vegas other than that. Watching people drink and gamble is pretty entertaining.
Oh yeah, that's a show in itself.
Yeah, exactly. So we've also been in similar online circles, so on Facebook and everything as well.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
And that's what I want to talk about because you have an interest. And of course, as you've noticed, and we'll talk more about this in a little bit, we've had a lot of triangle UFO cases that we've posted, but you had your own extraordinary sighting, correct?
Correct. It was actually 20 years ago last month when I encountered a black triangle on my way up to Area 51, back when I previously lived in Las Vegas at the time. Basically, it was just late after work one night, decided to make a trip up there, and on my way had encountered a black triangle hovering over the highway. And this was like maybe 10 minutes outside of town, so it wasn't really that far. I was certainly closer to Las Vegas than I was to Area 51 at the time. Essentially, I saw it off in the distance. At first, I thought it was just another car in the road. Looked like a bunch of headlights ahead of me, but it was still far off that couldn't really tell what it was. Just assumed it was a car. But as I drove closer to it, I realized it was actually hovering over the road. And my first impression was it was a helicopter, probably a police copter looking for speeders, but at the time of night and the location just didn't make any sense. They weren't really going to find many speeders in the middle of nowhere that late at night. So I got to thinking then, of course, this must be a UFO or something. Obviously, something flying over the road for no apparent reason is curious enough.
About how high over the road was it?
20 feet or less.
Wow, so very close.
Yeah, very close. I had a pair of binoculars in the car, so I actually pulled out my binoculars while I'm driving and trying to view the object just in case it was gone by the time I arrived, which I could see that there was something there, that it definitely was a solid object over the road, shining the lights on the road. But trying to drive with binoculars, 50, 60 miles an hour is not a good idea. So I threw him in the back and just decided to step on it and see if I couldn't catch up with the craft. But it waited for me. It didn't move. It just sat there, just parked over the road. This was Highway 93, not too far from Apex.
Okay, and I'm
So
sorry, what time did you say it was?
it was just right around 10 o'clock, between 10 o'clock and 10:10. The whole thing lasted about 10 minutes.
Okay, and you were probably headed, what, to 375? Is that extraterrestrial highway?
Correct. Yeah,
And
I was take a 93 up in that direction until it eventually, you know, connects with 375.
So, and if I remember the area correctly, I mean, it's pretty deserted. It doesn't take far to get out of Vegas to be in the desert there, and there's some hills to the left where the Tonopah and all the Nellis Range and everything is, right?
Yeah, and in fact, this area on 93, of course, is just on the south end of the Nellis Air Force Range.
Wow, interesting. I'm sorry. So go ahead. So you started to come upon it?
Came upon it, parked right underneath it. It was really low to the ground. From my perspective, looking at the rear of the craft, it was actually cutting off the mountaintops off in the distance. So it was low enough that I couldn't actually see the mountains on the horizon because it just chopped them off. It was, of course, a black triangle. It was darker than a night sky, so you can actually make out the shape of the craft. It had 9 lights on it, and the light bulbs were what fascinated me the most about the craft, especially since there was really nothing else you can see. I mean, you can see the black outline of the triangle, but there was nothing as far as details on the craft to study other than the lights themselves. And the light bulbs were simply filament floodlights, your standard Thomas Edison type bulbs. Well, you know, not the type you would use in, say, your house. But as far as the technology goes with filament bulbs and the way they work in that respect. So the technology was, you know, very man-made, very familiar, nothing exotic or unusual about it.
Were they all white?
Yeah. All 9 white lights.
And what was the configuration of the lights? 3 on each side, or were there some on the tips? Or
it was shaped in a delta formation, so you have 1 light front and center, and then on each side, 4 lights coming off of that. But when I was looking at the craft and figuring out the spacing between each light, it would have been entirely possible. You know, supposedly maybe they have some type of controls with the lights on these craft that can, you know, light up different arrays, different formations of the lights. So it looked like the lights could have easily wrapped around all 3 edges of the craft.
And was there any noise?
No. you know, I was listening, trying to hear any type of noise. It was windy that night, and you can hear, you know, when you're out in a desert at night and the wind is blowing, you can definitely hear it blowing through the brush. Pretty good, and that was basically all I could hear was the wind blowing through the brush. But outside of that, no, there was no noise.
So you were by yourself out there under this craft?
Yeah.
So, yeah, then what happened?
Basically, just sat there observing it, just couldn't take my eyes off of it. I had to pinch myself really good until I actually drew blood just to make sure I wasn't imagining this or, you know, it was some dream or something. Just had to tell myself this was really happening. Just messed around with the car, revved up the engine to make sure the car was still running. Everything was still turned on. And just basically waiting to see what this craft would do. It just sat there, not moving. Finally, I decided to reach behind me for the binoculars because I wanted a really good look at the light bulbs on the other
side. So you didn't get out of your car?
I wanted to, but I was a little hesitant to.
Yeah.
I really wanted to get out and grab some rocks and see if I couldn't bust out the lights on the underside of it because it was certainly close enough I could have. Yeah, I was a little hesitant about throwing rocks at this thing. So I reached behind me for the binoculars because I wanted a really good look at the lights. I was, you know, expecting maybe to see some type of logo or, you know, GE stamped on these things or something. So I couldn't find the binoculars. I must have threw them, you know, pretty good in the back. So I turned around to see if I can visually see them and grab them. But the split second I turned away from the craft, it started flying away. So I grabbed the binoculars, turned back around, and realized it's not hovering over me anymore, and it had taken off. So I scanned the horizon and noticed that it had exited to my 7 o'clock position from the direction I was facing. So it was kind of heading in a westerly direction towards Vegas, you know, halfway between Vegas and the Nellis Air Force Range when I spotted it again. And of course I had the binoculars on hand, and picked it up and was watching it. I was, you know, flying away. And that was the most unusual part of it, was the manner in which it flew. You know, typically when you read UFO reports, they fly pretty level, straight, you know, standard for flight, you know, same as an aircraft. It's going to fly in a pretty straight line. But this was actually hugging the ground in a way that it followed the contour of the ground. So if the ground went up a little, it rose a little. If the ground went down a little, it went down a little. It was as if it was controlled to stay 20 feet from the ground, regardless of what the ground did. Wow. So it just followed the ground all the way until it eventually reached that mountain range that was just to the north of Highway 93. Mm-hmm. And once it reached the base of the mountain, I was expecting it was going to fly over it, but it actually climbed the mountain in a way that it just stayed 20 feet off the ground and eventually climbed up, went over the top and down the other side of it.
Wow.
And the last direction it was heading was basically towards Nellis Air Force Range.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that is pretty extraordinary. And like you said, a little different than other reports. Now, you were headed to Area 51, and so at this point, was that because you had an interest in UFOs, or was it an interest in black projects, or both?
Well, at the time, I actually had no knowledge, really, of man-made UFOs or anything like that. I was totally on the whole alien angle, and I made a lot of trips out to Area 51 hoping to have, you know, a sighting or an encounter or something to that effect. So that night completely caught me off guard. Was totally unexpected to some degree. I know the story is supposed to come out later this year, and a book from Ryan, pronounce his last
Sprague?
Name. Yes.
Yeah.
And
I call him Spray Goo for fun.
There's certainly more to the story. It didn't begin exactly when I drove out there. The way the story goes was basically I was at work that evening when I was told to go out to Area 51 that night. It's just something that's been with me since my childhood. I received these, like, images, precognition images, and usually if I do what it tells me, they'll, you know, come to pass. So this particular night, it told me to go to Area 51. And
so you were compelled by this inner kind of
voice telling me to go to Area 51 that night, correct?
Wow. Is it a voice, or is it more like you said, more like a feeling and then an imagery or something?
It varies with each time it happens. This was the only time it had anything to do with UFOs. Typically, it's just benign stuff in my personal life. It deals with either things happening to me or family members. But with this particular night, it was more like a very strong gut feeling hunch with a voice, basically, go to Area 51.
Wow.
And when that happened, automatically I assumed there's only one reason, because I've made many trips out there prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the only reason you go out there is hoping to see something. So automatically I assumed, you know, that something must be, you know, about to happen, or I'm going to have some kind of sighting or encounter.
That's what I was going to ask. I mean, when you first saw this thing and saw it was a triangular craft, was your first notion to think this is likely an extraterrestrial craft?
Yes, and actually on the way there, because of that incident or situation, the whole way there I'm thinking, okay, you know, they gave me some message, some signal, they want to meet me, you know, they're going to roll out the red carpet, I'm going to meet some ambassador, they're going to give me a nice tour of the whole galaxy and tell me everything I want to know and then drop me back off at home, you know, in time for bed. But, you know, it was far from what really happened. And when I saw the craft and saw the lights on it and come to realize that this was most likely a military stealth aircraft, although a very advanced one, then, you know, that threw me for a loop. Because at that time, you know, like I said, I was, you know, all into the whole alien angle and really knew nothing at the time about man-made UFOs and what type of technology we may have.
And so, and this inner voice or this inner feeling that you get, do you feel that it is extraterrestrial in nature, or did you at that time, has your views changed on that?
Well, that was actually part of the issue because, you know, for the many years after that, I was suffering from a post-traumatic stress disorder because of that night and dealing with the possibility that maybe I was an alien abductee, that, you know, maybe it's been happening my whole life. So I had to really examine my life and some of the incidents that have happened throughout it to determine whether or not, you know, that was me or not. Mm-hmm. And wound up going to seeing a abduction support therapist, going to group meetings and things of that nature. When finally I just come to accept that the craft was man-made, not extraterrestrial at all, and that basically that precognition is just something that's been with me since my childhood, and it just seems to be something naturally I've been able to do, and not necessarily there because of an ET influence.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So these lights were, it seems, one of the things that was really striking to you, because like you said, they seemed, to be, very much human technology, something similar to what you've seen before.
Yeah. When we look at filament light bulbs, you know, of course we credit Thomas Edison for inventing them, but really they were around for a while before he came along. It was just that Thomas Edison found a way to make them better and commercialize light bulbs. And of course, you know, at the time we needed a power grid to, you know, keep the lights turned on at night as well. And that was our first exposure to artificial lighting, so to speak. And since then, you know, we have LED lights, we have fluorescent lights, we have an assortment of different types of lights. And by today's standards, the incandescent or the filament bulb is pretty outdated, only because in terms of energy use, most of the energy is wasted and it's not actually converted over to light. Rather, it's turned into heat. Mm-hmm. Recent years, some of these bulbs are basically being phased out because of that, and, you know, and trade off for the more energy efficient fluorescent bulbs that a lot of people are using today.
Mm-hmm. So, but you think these were a filament, because even LEDs nowadays, now they have the little chip inside of the bulb, so they're very similar to the filament. Mm-hmm. But did you definitely see like the wires of a filament?
Oh yeah. It had very large coils. These were very large lights, a standard for floodlights, and the coils were very large. So it's, you know, standard light bulb where if you stare at a bulb long enough and you close your eyes, kind of like staring at the sun, you have it burned on your retina for a little while afterwards. So you can totally make out the coils and, tell, you know, that's exactly what it was. There was no mistake in that. But again, if this was extraterrestrial or aliens, their technology would be, you know, far surpassed our own, and wouldn't even be easily recognizable. Presumably, by the time they reach a technological level to visit other planets, their artificial lighting would have also been equally as advanced and would have been totally on a different level.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, in many abduction cases, you know, they talk about a light that also can use to basically pick people up and bring them into the craft, you know, light on a whole different level than simply a light bulb.
Mm-hmm. So this was, what, 96 that you had the sighting?
Yeah, March 27th of 1996.
Mm-hmm. So then, your thoughts afterwards, now you're very into the black triangles, understandably so, but do you now doubt the extraterrestrial visitation is happening, or do you think perhaps, what are your thoughts that way now?
Well, I know when you start bringing up man-made UFOs, a lot of people get defensive, especially if they're feel they've had alien encounters or meetings. because, you know, quickly they try to say, well, you're just trying to say all UFOs are man-made, there are no aliens, and that's far from the truth. When you consider all the reports of alien sightings or encounters or abductions, be it hundreds or thousands, it only takes just one of them telling the full truth to make all this real. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they encountered aliens, but their experience was 100% real, and then it's, you know, up to the investigators to determine whether that was truly an alien they encountered. But certainly, it just takes one real case. And I would have to believe that out of all these cases, there is certainly that.
So when it comes to black triangles themselves, do you have the feeling that some are man-made and some are not? Or are you starting to feel that perhaps all of them are?
I would probably say the majority are. A couple years ago, I had crunched some numbers as far as black triangle reports go. And the vast majority of sightings began really in the 90s, although it went back into the 80s and even the 70s. It was in the early 90s that the reports of triangle UFOs just began to skyrocket. And today is actually one of the most commonly reported types of shapes of UFOs. But, of course, it's not the only black UFO. We have black triangles. We have black rectangles, as one was just reported on your site the other day. Black boomerangs. So it would seem that they have a bunch of different types of possibly military UFOs or man-made UFOs.
And your sighting was, what, about a year, I guess almost to the day, prior to the Phoenix Lights incident?
Yes. And the odd thing was, I remember about 95 to 96, we were having a bunch of weird lights over Las Vegas at the time, and I don't think it ever got reported. But most likely it was flares, but it was certainly certainly got me wondering about the Phoenix Lights. But yeah, it wasn't too long before that.
Have you then taken a look at the Phoenix Lights and drawn up some ideas?
Actually, when I lived in Tucson, I had a good friend who witnessed the Phoenix Lights, because, of course, after Phoenix, then it was also witnessed over Tucson. And her whole family had witnessed the craft as it basically flew right over their vehicle and seemed to be heading right towards Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. So, I would assume that it was possibly a military aircraft, one of the boomerangs.
Yeah, I guess, really, and that's what's difficult with a lot of these reports, and is that, you know, and when I was a field investigator, I mean, even if I investigated a case that I thought was compelling, you know, it was something that we didn't know what it was. The witness seemed very credible. You still can't rule out that it is something, a black project, black military project, technology to working on that isn't available to the public.
Yeah, and that's also, you know, a big difficulty with investigations is, you know, we just never know because we don't have any insight into these projects as to what their capabilities are these days. So a lot of people could easily mistake these things for alien vehicles, and until they're declassified, we won't know any better.
You know, and, you know, it brings up a lot of, you got a lot of good points about the 90s and black triangles, you know, the Cosford incident in the UK. Nick Pope talks a lot about that, and that was the Phoenix incident movie they did recently. They released a video of Nick talking about Cosford, and I've interviewed him on it and written about it. But that was a triangular case where a lot of military saw it, and funny enough, Nick says they called the U.S. and said, hey, was this yours? And the U.S. said, no. Do you have anything like that? Because we've had reports of stuff like that, too.
Yeah, I can imagine. And, of course, you know, it's one of those things where everything's compartmentalized. So unless you have a need to know, you're just not going to know. You know, same with the F-117 stealth fighter while it was operating in secrecy. You know, we had the whole squadron, you know, operating in a complete secrecy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it comes no surprise that most people would not be aware of these craft or, you know, where they operate, who they're from.
Yeah. It also seems that period of time, 80s and 90s, there was more interesting sightings happening around the Area 51 area, because at that time, it was not like it had a lot of visitors. It was still something most people didn't believe existed. I think they had a little bit more secrecy or anonymity back then, as opposed to now where it's just really famous.
Yeah, of course, yeah, in the 90s, that was the heydays when it was just starting to get out there. Glenn Campbell was out there. I met him many times, and he was running his whole Area 51 museum and used to have conventions out there and whatnot. Of course, today it's pretty much dead. Popular, you know, everyone knows about it, but not what it used to be back in the day.
Mm-hmm. So having been someone who lives in Vegas or lived in Vegas and visited often, there were more visitors in the 90s than there are now?
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. You know, back then, Area 51 was just getting out there, thanks to Bob Lazar, George Knapp, and all that work. So the 90s, it really took off, and it was, you know, an Independence Day and things of that nature. When you go out there today, of course, people still stop at the Alien Inn and for a burger, whatnot. But it just doesn't seem to be as it was back then, even if it's more widely known these days than it was then.
Mm-hmm. So, and now you have a Facebook page, right, devoted to Black Triangle UFOs?
Yeah, it's called Black Triangle UFOs. doing not too bad, but yeah, usually typically sharing your news feeds whenever there's a sighting of a black UFO.
And what do you feel that you have discovered over the years looking into this?
Well, it depends. With the triangles, it seems their technology has advanced a lot more since I've seen mine. Some of the newer models, it seems they've mastered cloaking, possibly making these things invisible to the naked eye. And if we look at stealth aircraft and we look at the history of aviation and military aircraft, we can kind of get a sense on where it is they want to go for the future. When we have a really good grasp or understanding of where aircraft and how they've been used in the past, particularly, you know, during wartime. You say stealth aircraft, most people, you know, think of the F-117 or the stealth bomber, and they're stealth in respect that ideally they want to be invisible on radar, because you don't want the enemy to see you coming miles away. So you don't want to be picked up on radar, but stealth is a lot more than just being invisible to radar. Also, it's about being invisible to the naked eye. Is about being so quiet that you don't hear it. There's a number of different things that play on stealth. Same with heat signatures. You know, you want to reduce the heat signature on a craft so that weapons can't lock on that. So it's a number of different things. And all those things obviously seem to play out in these black triangle UFOs. Many of them seem to have cloaking capabilities, making them invisible to the naked eye. They typically, although not always, typically don't make any sound, so you don't hear it coming. If you do hear it, it's a very low humming noise or a low buzzing noise. And, of course, the shape of these craft suggests that they also would be pretty much nearly invisible on radar. And the fact that they're painted black suggests they want to blend in with the night sky and typically would operate most often at night.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the term TR-3B is kind of thrown out there. It's used kind of frivolously and generously, I think. But do you think that's – have you looked into the possibility of that craft?
I have looked into that, and like you said, that name is just thrown out there a lot for pretty much every triangle sighting, but it seems there are so many different models that you couldn't, you know, pin that name on one particular model.
Mm-hmm. It almost seems like it's our own, you know, the UFO enthusiasts have created this red herring of their own making, whereas, like you say, it's probably much more complicated than that, in that there are many models. Like you said, there's different shapes of craft, so there could be multiple projects. That could have been, well, the TR-3 or A, I think it was, or one of those was a stealth prototype project that never got developed. But there could be a number of other. The Aurora is something that's out there, of course, that uses not conventional, but it supposedly is louder, and that is something that is somewhat verified as a real project, although it's still secret. But there are many projects probably going on out there.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and I have no doubt that it'll continue going on as it has been. Even still today, these triangles are hovering over roads, chasing vehicles, hovering over people's houses. So it's, they're putting them out there. They want people to see them.
That's a good point. Like, how large was the one that you saw?
It wasn't that big. I would say it was probably the standard size of a fighter aircraft. Whereas I know people have seen ones that are as large as football fields.
Yeah.
So obviously there's a number of different models and sizes. It seems to go up to rectangles as well. These rectangles and boomerangs are typically football fields.
And how thick did it seem?
The top of it was a three-sided pyramid base, a tetrahedron. So when it flew away, the elevation it was at was lower than me, so I was more or less kind of looking down at it and was able to see two sides of the top and make out the top of the craft. But basically, it's just like a three-sided pyramid, short.
Oh, wow. So very interesting. Possibly even then similar to what they saw at the Rendlesham Forest.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Which was another triangular craft that, a credible case in the UK. For those who don't know, and that was, what, Christmas night 1980?
Yeah, correct.
And so a lot of these credible cases out there, and like you said, especially starting in the 80s, I mean, Belgium had a whole wave of them.
Yeah, and I know David Marler, who I've met once when we discussed this, and he's more of the believes that these are possibly mostly alien, although there could be some man-made ones. But, of course, he cites that triangles go back, all the way to the beginning. And in some respects, that's true, but not nearly like the numbers we see today. We're talking about hundreds of sightings these days versus, if you're lucky, one sighting every couple of years back then.
Mm-hmm.
And triangular design aircraft was no secret back then. The Nazis first started doing it with the Horton brothers and their design, and that only continued after World War II. Mm-hmm. In 1970, there was an interesting sighting of a triangle craft flying low to the ground in Utah. This was, I believe, in Frank Salisbury's book, The Utah UFO Display, where a witness saw a green, well, actually it was a multicolored triangle flying low to the ground, but it was primarily green, which was basically typical camouflage paint scheme for a lot of military aircraft at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another thing that you said, was around, there are a lot more sightings. I mean, it almost seems at times where the majority of sightings are triangles. We're just posting triangle after triangle sighting. There's so many of them. And this has led you to believe that they want to be seen.
And that was part of the problem NIDS had with these aircraft or these craft. Of course, not everyone recalls the National Institute for Discovery Science under Robert Bigelow. Mm-hmm. But they were very big on investigating triangular UFOs, as they called them, big black deltas back then. And they had did a number of press releases from their findings, basically saying these are DOD aircraft. And eventually, I think it was a year or two later, they recanted their position and basically said they don't know, only because of the manner in which these craft were being used. Typically, like when the F-117 was still secret, they didn't exactly go flying around buzzing highways and trying to be seen. You know, they were very secretive in the operation of those aircraft versus these almost have like an open deployment, as NIDS called it, to where, you know, they want to be seen. They'll hover over your car, they'll chase your car, hover over your house. It's like basically a look at me type of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not completely trying to, you know, hide these. But of course, then the question is, why would they do that? And there's a bunch of different theories about that. One is, of course, the UFO phenomenon has always provided a perfect cover for secret military aircraft, simply because, you know, they can hide behind UFO reports, and most people would dismiss it as some type of alien vehicle or, you know, something from Mars, whatever. It's not typically going to come back to them as, you know, as this type of military aircraft or that type.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And what's great about that is that this technology, it seems like, you know, they don't have a light bulb technology necessarily that was more advanced. They just possibly, and this is just, of course, all speculation, were able to discover how to make some sort of anti-gravity craft using a technology that's way beyond anything else. And so knowing people would be, you know, would not believe that humans could do that if they did fly them around areas like they may be doing, then people like NIDS would not believe them to be military. And most people probably wouldn't, because they'd be like, you know, well, why would they fly them around populated areas? It almost makes you think that perhaps the Belgium Wave or Rendlesham Forest were good opportunities to be seen and to start this mythology around them being extraterrestrial in nature to cover the project. It would make a lot of sense.
And there's a number of different things that come into play. And, of course, you know, a lot of people say, you know, obviously this can't be man-made or military or what have you because they're doing this. But it could also serve a purpose. One of the interesting things about my encounter that night was on the front of my car I had a novelty plate that said Area 51. So as I approached the UFO, I'm assuming – well, obviously I was being watched because they knew precisely when to fly away the second I took my eyes off that thing. So they were watching me just as much as I was watching them. And I can only assume that they obviously must have had some type of camera on the underside to be able to view what is under the craft and view me. So, you know, when I looked away, it decided to take off at that point. And it must have seen my front plates when I approached it, because the angle it flew away, the direction it flew away, would have given it a perfect, you know, the right opportunity to look at my rear license plate. And one of the things about hovering over vehicles on the road is, with a license plate number, you can easily find out who's driving that car. And if you were conducting some kind of experiment or test, you wanted to follow up with that person to see how that event or that sighting affected your life. You would know exactly who was in it. For the most part, presuming someone else wasn't driving your vehicle and, you know, the registered owner is actually behind the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
So with DMV records, I'm sure they would have access to that sort of thing and be able to figure out who that person was.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, who knows if they have some program to follow up and see how these things are affecting people and whether people are really ready to see this sort of thing or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it seems like it – well, how fast did it move?
It was actually as slow as a helicopter. It wasn't very fast at all, which mm-hmm. was surprising. Typically, you hear about these things just shooting off at lightning speed. But, no, if I had a – you know, a drone at the time, I probably could have kept up with it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this thing was manned?
At first I did, but seeing where the technology is going over the years, I would say it was probably an early UAV. And I would assume that that is the direction they were going with most of these aircraft, as some type of unmanned aerial vehicle.
Yeah, really interesting. Well, that's some really interesting stuff. I knew this would be fascinating. I mean, I'm fascinated with black triangles, and I know a lot of other people are because, like you said, there are so many sightings of them, and your sighting is just one of the many exciting ones out there. But you're also working on other things.
A few years ago, I started taking an interest in these icefall reports, and decided to invest more time in it and energy and research. So I've been putting UFOs to the side for a while, because I've been doing that for about 20 years, and decided to pick up something else that, for the most part, isn't quite fully explained. Of course, Charles Fort wrote about it in his book, The Book of the Damned. And that was probably the first list or compilation of icefall reports. Since that time, Morris K. Jessup in the 50s wrote about them in both of his UFO books. Then there was Professor James McDonald, who also was interested in it, wrote about it. And there's been a few other UFO investigators along the way that have researched the phenomenon, but no one's actually done any real hard research on the subject, so I decided to, give it a shot and see what I can learn and figure out on that subject.
What is the nature of the phenomenon?
Well, it's multifaceted. Of course, aircraft play a big part. Most people are familiar with blue ice falling. A leaking bathroom on a plane will cause that, and that's what most people are familiar with. But ice can form on a plane in a number of ways, including wastewater disposal from a craft, which is usually dumped from the craft, depending on the type of craft. And that'll build up on the outside of the craft, and as it descends for its landing, it'll usually enter warmer airs, and that breaks off and often crashes into people's cars or through the roof, things of that nature. So those are usually the ones we always hear about in the news, another icefall case falling through someone's house. So a good majority of them is from just aircraft. And it's kind of like the UFO phenomenon. You get 100 cases, and typically you can solve most of them with just normal explanations, but you always have a small percentage that are going to be totally unexplained and defy rational explanation. So you run into the same thing with ice fall cases. When you get past all the aircraft incidents, there's always going to be a handful that truly just defy rational explanation. And it would seem some of them, as a couple scientists recently have been studying the phenomenon, believe that it's possibly done by global warming, and somehow these large chunks of ice are just forming in the upper atmosphere and then falling to Earth, which maybe, maybe not. The type of updraft speed or wind speed required for these things to get that large would be, I don't even think, possible at this time, simply because some of these ice chunks have been reportedly several hundred pounds.
Wow. Can you tell us one of the more or one of the mysterious stories?
One of my favorite cases was a case from 1849. I think it was in early August, and it was Scotland, fell on a farm. As the report goes, the witnesses heard the loudest thunder they had ever heard. That's how they described it. It was just a tremendous thundering sound, just one thunder sound, and then this large ice mass hit the ground, just narrowly missing the farmhouse. And basically, it had a 20-foot circumference.
Wow.
So if you do the math, you figure the ice had weighed over a ton.
Oh my gosh.
That's basically a small car. And for something to develop that large in the atmosphere is just impossible, because the wind required to keep that thing afloat long enough to get that large could never happen. So the most likely explanation was this was a piece of ice from space. Mm-hmm. Another interesting part of that report was their description of the ice was primarily composed of cubes or diamonds, diamond-shaped cubed ice, which wouldn't be discovered for another 100 years until, I believe it was the 40s, and it's called cubic ice, which is typically formed in the atmosphere, upper atmosphere. So it would seem that what possibly happened is this ice came from space. Once it got through the upper atmosphere, it melted but refroze as it hit the colder parts of our atmosphere. And then as it descended, that thundering sound was actually a shockwave as this ice was traveling faster than sound. Mm-hmm. So basically breaking the sound barrier.
Hmm. Cool. Weird.
Of course, when you start getting into that sort of explanation, and then the next idea is what type of life was in that ice, because we talk about panspermia and how it may have seeded life on this planet. It's possible it's still going on today, and yet we're looking to space and UFOs for extraterrestrial life, when in fact it's probably falling from the skies all around us all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's what's interesting is there are some scientists who believe that's the case, and they're seen as very fringe, but it seems like mainstream science is getting more and more warming up, for lack of a better term, to that idea.
There was a case right around 2000, and this was the same time frame when all the ice was falling over Spain, and the whole term megacryo meteor was born. In Ontario, right around Ontario, Canada, ice had fallen on a man's driveway. He collected it and eventually had it analyzed. Now, whether or not it was done right, it doesn't appear it was handled correctly. So his findings are certainly debatable. But he felt he found alien microbial life in this ice, and eventually held a few press conferences making his announcements. Of course, it wasn't well received by the scientific community or the public, and not many people know about this case, but he still claims to this day that he found microbial life from another planet, or at least from space, and has a whole website devoted to it. It was called Snyder-Crite, if I'm not mistaken. He actually named it after himself. But it certainly raises the possibility that if ice is falling from space, then it may very well have microbial life in it.
Mm-hmm. I think they recently said that there were some bacteria that grew better in space in experiments on the ISS also. And then, of course, Russia said that they scraped some algae off of the ISS. But the question is, where did that algae come from? Above or below, which is being debated.
Yeah, exactly. And I recall seeing an article about it growing better in space in that one case. So certainly it raises some interesting questions. And it's, mm-hmm. it's one of those things where it's taken this long for anyone to really start looking at this stuff. It seems like the answers have been there all along. We want to find alien life, but it could be it's falling at our front doorstep all this time. Mm-hmm. And, they preach about panspermia and it seeding life on Earth. But, when we think about that, it's always in respect, well, that was billions of years ago. It doesn't happen anymore. But it could very well still be happening to this day. And mm-hmm. Who knows what may be falling from the skies on the ground in our lakes or oceans. There's no telling without any, real investigative work or analysis of these ice falls.
Mm-hmm. And you called it mega cryometeors, or you used that term. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that was a term invented by Dr. Martinez from Spain after studying the ice falls in Spain around 2000. Basically, it means a large icy or frozen meteor.
Mm-hmm. And I saw you post something about that. Is that a new Facebook page or a new website you're putting up?
Both. I have a Facebook page. It's just called Mega Cryometeors, but there's also a website, megacryometeors.org.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I'm still compiling the database, actually working with another gentleman who just submitted all his data back from when he worked on this in the 90s. So right now we have a database about 300 cases of ice falls.
Wow.
Going back to the early 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm doing is mapping every ice fall case, thanks to Google Maps and GPS coordinates and all that we have today. It makes it a lot easier to map them all and look for patterns. And in one such case, we've mapped everything over the LA area and found that most of the ice falls over LA line up perfectly with the Los Angeles International Airport.
Hmm.
And there's actually another case that happened just last week over Colton, California, and using historical radar data, was able to pinpoint a plane that was flying directly over the impact spot at the time of the incident. So as you know, as we're finding out and seeing that a lot of it is the result of aircraft, but certainly not all of it.
Mm-hmm. So maybe you'll be able to make a case with all of this data that they need to be a little more careful with their disposal processes or how that comes out, especially like you said, when it's going through roofs and hitting cars and things.
Yeah, and certainly a few people have actually been hit by these things.
Wow.
There was a case in India late last year where one hit a woman and had injured her, but fortunately didn't kill her. A few people have actually been hit by these things, but never typically with the full force. Usually it's coming through a roof first or is being slowed down by some other object before it hits the person.
Wow.
I do recall, and I'm still researching these cases, but it was rumored two people were killed in the 50s from ice falls, but there's not much information available on those cases, so it's entirely possible. But certainly if that happened, obviously that would be a pretty good lawsuit.
Yeah. Besides the Facebook page, do you have a website for your Black Triangle work?
I used to. I don't have it up anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And just put it off to the side. When it comes to the triangle stuff, I think a lot of people are starting to warm up to the idea that these are man-made. It's certainly not, a new idea. And I think most people are pretty happy with just reading UFO reports in general rather than a site that's just devoted to this phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. But they can't go to your Facebook page if they want to see more cases and all in one place, right?
Yeah, typically when I see reports in the news, I'll share them on that page, and they can usually follow with the latest reports on there.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is a big deal, though. I mean, if they have a project that has been secret since the 80s or 90s of something that can move like what you witnessed, that's a big deal. And so I think this is an important topic. So really interesting stuff. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, no problem. It's my pleasure. Thank you, Alejandro.
Thank you very much to Sean for being on the show. A very interesting discussion. I love this talk about black triangles. I know you guys probably too, because they're a really popular sighting. Lots of people see them, and there's been incredible sightings people have. Like I mentioned before, Lee Spiegel had an incredible one. We've talked about that on the show. Nick Pope has talked about several important cases and so on and so forth. So very fascinating, and I think Sean's sighting is one of the most incredible out there. Just fascinating. And I mean, I've known Sean for a while. I have no reason not to believe him. So pretty incredible stuff, and his thoughts are interesting on the topic, and his like precognitive stuff, that's also really interesting. I was not expecting that. I didn't even know about that. So really cool, really fun stuff to talk about. Thank you so much for being on the show, Sean. In fact, To find Sean's Black Triangle UFO page, just go to Facebook and search for Black Triangles and you'll find it. You know, there's not a whole lot of Black Triangle Facebook pages out there, and you'll be able to find that and see all the stories that he posts on that topic. Very interesting. And then the other thing he talked about was this mega cryo meteors. If you go to megacryometeors.org, you'll find the website that he is creating on that topic as well, if you find that interesting and you want to follow that phenomenon. That's pretty cool stuff too. So thank you so much for Sean, to Sean for being on the show. That was a really interesting conversation. And guess what? We're going to have another show. So I'm really, you know, we're back on track. I'm going to try to have a show every week, and we are on track for that. I've got next week's interview scheduled. This is going to be really interesting. We're going to be talking to an astronomer and essentially a project where they are, you might be aware of the WOW signal. That was a SETI signal that was obtained that they thought was mysterious. And some people have been lately saying that they think it was a comet. Others are not so sure. Some people believe it was intelligent in nature, so it might be extraterrestrial. So we're going to talk to him about this signal and his project to recreate that signal. So they really want to test this comet theory. But we'll talk to him. He's done some UFO research, and we'll see what his views are on this topic. But he's getting a lot of news, including I think there was a story I posted on my Facebook page on Discover Magazine. But the April Fool's jokes, of course, you can check the Open Minds UFO or openminds.tv for all those stories we talked about. You can also go into the daily UFO headline sections for the headlines that we post on a daily basis. Of course, if you're familiar with the website, you'll know on the front page we post those daily UFO headlines. So you'll see that, and you'll see those Roger Marsh stories that we talked about with Martin. Also, like I said, we have an Open Minds UFO report that we just recently post. You'll find a link to that as well at openminds.tv, or if you go to the Open Minds production YouTube page. The other thing that we're doing lately, Michael did this for the first time just like last week, Michael Klein, you know, our video producer, he put together a video of UFO photos from our archives, just a short little video with some music, and you know, there's no narration, but it's really cool because we can post it in Facebook and then it plays like those videos you see on Facebook, so you could see these pictures and get some information about them. We'll have another one of those up this week. We also post those to YouTube, but it's another reason you want to check out the Open Minds Facebook page, my Facebook page, and follow that so you can keep up to speed. The other thing you can do to keep up to speed with all of our news is go to the webpage, and on the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little box that says sign up for our email newsletter. So I certainly implore everybody to do so because it keeps you up to speed on our UFO news report, the radio show, the stories that we're doing, the videos that we're posting, everything that's going on, and of course, the UFO Congress, because that's a year-long project. I mean, we are already working on that, already working out the speakers for next year, so very exciting. Also, we have our video portal where we've already got a lot of lectures from the UFO Congress streaming, and we're going to have a lot more, so you'll hear more about that from us in the future, but now is a good time to go ahead and go subscribe, because there are many, many hours of videos to watch on there, and we're going to have a lot more. I mean, we're going to have a ton of videos up in the next few months, like hundreds of hours of videos. So lots of amazing stuff we're going to have up there for just a couple dollars a month. So check that out at openminds.tv. Otherwise, thank you so much to Sean for being on the show. He was a great guest. Thank you very much to Martin for joining me with the news again. Don't forget his show, Podcast UFO. And also, don't forget to go look at the show notes to help him out and give him some donations for kids with leukemia. And then thank you to Caleb Hanks, who does the opening and close music. And finally, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you all so much for listening. It's just wonderful that you're here. every week to listen. It's so much fun to share all this information with people. So again, thank you all very, very, very much for being here. I will be talking to you next week. Until then, have a great week. Adios, muchachos.